Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
And it's time for Movies and Booze. We are joined in the studio by Dean McGuinness, Zara Hederman and Fionnuala Jones. Good afternoon to you all.
Hello.
You want to talk about building an IPA as opposed to just brewing one?
As opposed to brewing one. The design of the recipe for IPAs. So IPAs kind of started out as something that there wasn't a point where somebody said, I'm going to brew an IPA, and then they went to brew it. What they did was they were brewing a beer, and then over a period of time, they realised it was successful and more people copied it. And then it became a style because lots of people were brewing it and you could put them all into a category and they were all
right,
similar
okay.
to each
and,
other.
And in our, why is it Indian pale ale?
Because the beer was originally brewed as an above average strength, quite hoppy pale ale in the UK. And it was the Bow Street Brewery in the UK that was brewing it. And they were shipping it to the Indian colonies. Now, the people who were into beer history get very, very obsessive about this. It is not true that it is the only beer that was being shipped to the Indian colonies. There were lots of different beers that were being shipped to the Indian colonies that were also successful. But IPA had a particular example because it was a paler colour, which made it a little bit easier to drink in hot weather. And with lots of hops, the hops acted as an antibacterial agent within the beer, and the higher strength helped to keep the beer right when it went to the Indian colonies. So it survived very well and was still a very palatable drink by the time it got to India.
Okay, so it was most successful beer, I suppose.
Yes, very successful, in India. Then grew up and then was recreated by American craft brewers looking for something with historic ties and has kind of become almost
colonialism. Yes, thanks for that. Right. So, obviously, Toy Story 5 is the huge release this week. But A Private Life is in... I didn't know that Jodie Foster could speak French.
Neither did I. And she's incredible at speaking French. And it wasn't something that she learned for this role. She actually went to a French prep school when she was a child in LA.
She's super smart, isn't she? Yeah.
And she's just so talented at everything she does. Whenever her English-speaking roles go to France, she tends to dub the French herself. And the previous French film she was in, A Very Long Engagement, about 20 years ago, she has a small role in that and she spoke French in that, but it was a kind of more of a bit part. But she's incredible in this, so much so that she's the first American actor to be nominated for a César Award.
Good for her. Exactly. Good for her. And Toy Story 5, you're kind of... it's one of those things that the people probably love so much, you kind of go, when another one comes along, you kind of get a feeling of anxiety.
Yeah.
Because how can you maintain that standard?
Yeah, especially when, like so many of the previous films, they do have a nice, neat ending to then kind of finish the franchise.
Especially this one was supposed to, or four was supposed to be the end of it.
Yeah, Tom Hanks was like, we're done. And then the directors had other plans because it makes billions of dollars. So I was a bit kind of tetchy going into this because it's toys versus tech. But I laughed and I absolutely bawled my eyes out.
That's what you want.
Yeah.
That's what you want.
Yeah.
How the Grinch Stole Christmas. There's a sequel coming.
We're getting a second one.
How the Grinch Stole More Christmas. I don't really get it.
Another holiday, perhaps. Who knows? Jim Carrey is in talks to reprise the role. I would say that's more than a done deal. I'd say they're just adding zeros to the number at this stage because it's Ron Howard is coming back and his usual partner, Brian Grazer. Script is coming from Alec Berg, who's worked on stuff like Barry and Curb Your Enthusiasm. We've no idea about plot or anything like that, but you know, Ron Howard has come out and said that they've been talking about the sequel for a long time and they've thought about it and said, you know what, it's worth a try. But I think it's interesting because this is the role that nearly broke Carrie. Carrie was getting a boatload of money for this and due to the prosthetics and everything, it was taking, I think, 2.5 hours to put the prosthetics on and then an hour to take them off. He was ready to walk away. This is well documented. And they had to bring in some CIA operative to be I'm going to teach you torture techniques to, or like techniques you'd need to get through torture so you can get through this, so you stay and do it. He said it was like having like a refrigerator strapped to his back, and that he also, because you're talking about like all the hair and stuff, he couldn't see himself because like they were really limited in what they could do in terms of CGI and stuff.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm also kind of like, are they gonna, is there gonna be a bit more CGI this time around to make it a bit easier for him to do it? Like he just said he used to like chain smoke through the process on a really long cigarette holder so that the Grinch didn't go up in flames, essentially. So
that's originally, it was, how long ago was it, the original one?
Is it the late 90s? Is it 1999?
Taylor Momsen is about 10.
Yeah. Yes. Wow. Yeah. But it's still like, it still kills on streaming around Christmas, needless to say. Like the streaming stats for around like the 2 weeks of Christmas. It's like, and it trumps the, I know they did a, they did an animated one recently from, I think, Universal Studios, in which I think Benedict Cumberbatch is the titular Grinch. And like, it's, it like, it out, it's, outdoes that in terms of streaming, so they're probably like, there is something in this because people keep coming back to it. But as you say, like, what, like that, a film ended, that film had an ending, like what do we do next?
Yeah,
he stole Christmas and then he gave it back.
Now I know he said he had retired and then he was in, what was he in, he came back for some garbagey movie,
Jim Carrey.
Yeah,
oh, the, is it the Sonic ones?
The Sonic ones.
How dare you? Dare you speak for me?
You know, it's not like I've retired. Oh, they've offered me The Godfather. No, I'll come out of So he hasn't retired then. He's totally unretired.
Like, well, again, probably for the right price. He isn't that prolific, though.
No.
Like, it does seem to be. I can't think of anything else where generally Dr. Robotnik in the Sonic the Hedgehog films that he's been doing. I'm open to correction on that, but.
But he's gone a bit like Doolally, would that be, you know?
Is he?
The Jim and Andy documentary certainly didn't do him any kind of favours with that.
I thought that was brilliant,
though. No, it was brilliant, but it was just how far he went to do Andy Kaufman, where he was even like going to Andy Kaufman's like family.
Yeah.
It was very method.
So.
Probably hard to come back from that. Yeah.
Because I know I thought he was like, I'm a painter now, or, you know, the way they always do that.
Yeah.
Daubing crap on canvas. People will buy it just because it's Jim Carrey's. Right. And Netflix have cancelled this show, The Burrows, which people were excited about. Just, is it just out of spite?
There's some speculation around that, yeah. So some backstory. The Burrows is, it's still on Netflix this first season, and it stars Alfred Molina and Gina Davis. And it's set in this kind of picturesque retirement community, but obviously not everything is as it seems. And Sam Cooper, who Molina plays, ends up forming this ragtag group inside there to uncover this secrets and lies, etc, etc. Seemed to be rating really well. It was second place on Netflix's top 10 English language TV chart, 5.6 million views, jumped to number one then in its first full week, and it was second in the Nielsen charts as well. Like, seemed to be doing like all in all pretty well, but there seems to have been some reports. This is being produced by the Duffer Brothers, who just did Stranger Things, and they've gone on and they've moved on to a deal with Paramount, having had this deal with Netflix for ages. Okay. So there's conflicting reports because it's like this show. This, it's not like this show was like trashy. That was reviewed like pretty well, I would say. But there's some reports that it was like, it was too expensive. Apparently costs around 10 million per episode, and the, even though the viewing is good, it's kind of not like Wednesday good to justify it.
Okay.
But then there are also it's the Hollywood Reporter has this reporting on this, where basically there's some speculation that the Duffers leaving has kind of rubbed the Netflix executives up the wrong way, and this is kind of maybe, as you said, maybe a way to get back to them. Like, they feel kind of embarrassed that they left. Now, they've had another source come out and like said they've denied that or whatever, but then there was also talk of, oh, we'll shop around for the second season, but Netflix essentially own all the rights, so it would make it impossible, and they're not going to sell it to Paramount when they are competitors, and also the Duffer Brothers have just gone to Paramount.
You know, but I assume if Paramount were offering the Duffer Brothers a big, you know, back up the truck full of money, that Netflix must have been doing the same, or
yeah,
Netflix,
I'd say so. Yeah,
we're sick of them.
Yeah, no, I'd say it was just money. Yeah. I'd say a bit more kind of freedom to maybe do other things.
Yeah.
They're working on some movie at the time that I know not
why,
a lot
why
about.
Why would Netflix be restricting them and saying, oh no, you can't do that?
No, maybe not. But I don't know, like, they're together a long time, and I suppose off the back of the Stranger Things kind of debacle, and that just being such a mess, and nobody's really clear or any clear on like why that went so awry, like whether it was them or like studio kind of meddling, or I don't really know. But yeah, maybe they were just like, let's go see if the grass is greener with Paramount.
Yeah, and the money is certainly greener. Right, so tell us about our first beer, Dean.
Right, so the first one we're tasting is Baptiste IPA. It's brewed in Ghent in Belgium, and it is a Belgian IPA. So with an IPA, when a brewer is looking to design a recipe for an IPA or for any beer style, what they'll look at is what's at the centre of the beer style. So with IPAs, the centre of the beer style is hop character. So they're looking at using a huge amount of hops in the beer, and then everything else gets kind of built around that. Now, with a classic IPA, an English or an American IPA, what you would have would be an American or an English style ale yeast. So yeast is the substance that converts the sugars in the beer into alcohol, carbon dioxide, and different flavours. And in broad terms, you can divide yeasts into two kind of large families, lager yeasts and ale yeasts. And then with ale yeasts, you can divide them broadly into two other families, non-puff yeasts and puff yeasts. Puff standing for phenolic off flavour.
Yeah.
So phenolic flavours are, they often come through as kind of spicy flavours. So clove, cinnamon, nutmeg, flavours like that would fit into that family. White pepper, black pepper, those flavours coming through. So this is an IPA, but what they've done is they've had a look at what makes an IPA, put in a huge amount of hop character, and then said what would make it Belgian. So they've used Belgian ale yeast as opposed to English or an American style ale yeast, and that gives it a certain amount of spicy flavour. And then in the grain bill, often with Belgian beers, they'll use kind of an unusual array of different grains and sources of sugar. So they've used Belgian candy sugar and pale malts and oats and so on. And that gives it quite an amount of complexity in the flavour. Absolutely delicious beer. There's a whole pile of stone fruit flavour in it. The stone fruit flavour is really interesting because it comes through as kind of peach apricot. But because there's quite an amount of sweetness in the beer there to balance out the hop flavour, when the sweetness combines with the fruit flavour, it gives you a kind of really juicy fruit flavour. And then when the spice from the ale yeast fermentation combines with the fruit flavour, it makes the fruit flavour taste a little bit like dried fruit.
Mm.
So you've got both dried fruit and juicy fruit happening at the same time, and it's the same fruit flavour.
It's so confusing.
As you're tasting it, it's quite unusual. The second thing that they've done, and again with having hop flavour as the kind of core of the beer, what you're going to have is an amount of flavours coming from the hops, typically with the type of hops that you're getting. It's fruity flavours again. But the other flavour that you get from hops is bitterness.
Mm.
Now, bitterness is an unusual flavour. We're kind of genetically programmed to get nervous when we taste bitterness. And the reason why is a lot of poisons are bitter.
Yeah.
So if you taste something and it's bitter, your brain kind of thinks, hang on, that could be dangerous. Be cautious and don't progress. It's the same with sourness. Lots of spoiled foods are acidic. So if you taste something that's acidic, then your brain kind of says, be cautious, there could be something wrong here. That being said, that doesn't mean that all bitter or all sour is bad. If it was, we wouldn't have vinegar on our chips, and we wouldn't enjoy various different flavours, or citric oranges and so on, have an amount of sourness and so on. So with bitterness, it does a great job of making a beer drinkable. But when you've got more of it there, you need to balance that out. So they put a lot of sweetness into the beer. It's balanced out by the bitterness. The bitterness makes sure that the sweetness isn't cloying. The sweetness contributes to the fruit flavour, makes it more juicy. The bitterness balances out the sweetness to ensure that it is a more drinkable beer. But at the same time, the spice from the fermentation flavour also balances out the sweetness, but it does it at different stages of drinking the beer.
Yes, so as it goes down. Is there only then really essentially three sorts of IPA if you can only use... I mean, there must be other sorts of yeast rather than the Belgian, the English or the American.
What they've done is they've started, because IPA is so popular as a beer style, it kind of almost feels like 40% of craft beer is IPA, and then like 200 other styles make up the other 60%. What they've done is they've done IPLs, India Pale Lagers. So they've substituted in lager yeast instead of the ale yeast.
Yeah.
You have IPAs brewed with American ale yeast, with English ale yeast, Belgian ale yeast as a Belgian IPA. They're now starting to do sour IPAs. So where you've got a sour beer combined with an IPA, which is quite tricky because sour and bitter can kind of clash. It's quite tricky to get it right. They vary the grain bills in it. So you can have black, red, oat, rye, IPA.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They just keep on varying it.
Somehow I regret I asked you that question. You could be here in an hour.
I only got halfway through.
Kristen Scott Thomas has done many fabulous French indie films that go unnoticed by many. Her French is flawless. She lives in France, though, Kristen Scott Thomas.
I believe so.
Yeah, I think she's married to a French man.
She has
been there.
Of sophistication.
She does.
Yeah.
She's great.
Because
I really admire her as a person. What movie would you like to do first, Sarah?
I think we'll do Toy Story 5 because it's out today.
Yeah.
And it's the big one.
Okay, it's the big one. Toy Story 5 coming up after this.
Snappy! Atlas! They're still here!
Bossy Cowgirl, we have to turn it back on!
No! No way! The last thing this world needs is more devices.
What? You're just gonna shove them back in the dark forever? Do you have any idea what that's like?
Fine. We gotta make this quick.
Yes!
Number one, you made number one.
Right, that's Toy Story 5. A lot of people, because as we were saying before, a lot of people assumed Toy Story 4 was the end of it. Mm-hmm. And Woody had gone off to, you know, ride the range with your woman sort of thing.
So with Bo Peep.
Yeah. How did they resolve that, or is that a spoiler?
No, not really. I mean, Woody now is working with Bo Peep to like help abandoned toys out and about.
Okay.
So like Woody and Buzz are very much like secondary characters in this. Like they don't really show up as much as you would think.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Jessie, this very much is Jessie's vehicle. And like, as I kind of said earlier, you can dip in and out of these films without seeing previous ones. I would say it is essential to see Toy Story 2 for this to really amp up the Jessie side of things.
Okay, right.
Because her whole thing was she was abandoned by her first child, Emily. She was left in a box by the side of the road. And in this film, we have Jessie and all of Andy's previous toys now belong to Bonnie, who we met in Toy Story 3. She's 8 years old and she's struggling to make friends because all of her peers are like hooked on their devices. So they're not outside playing. So there's this whole tech versus toys. And Jessie calls on Woody's help of like, how can she keep the toys relevant to Bonnie as a way for her to make connections with friends and make friends? And as he says to her, toys are for play. Tech is for everything. And we just get these constant shots of like children like glazed,
zombied out
in front of like their devices. So her parents' solution is to buy her a lily pad, which is voiced by Greta Lee. And basically she then becomes addicted to her own device. And then we have Jessie and Bullseye who have to go on this kind of odyssey journey where they are brought back to their original home, so Emily's home. So this brings up quite a lot of emotional trauma for Jessie in particular because she's like, I can't have this happen to me again after what happened with Emily. Bonnie has such an amazing imagination when she plays with the toys. We can't let tech win. So we have that kind of dynamic between tech and toys, imagination, connection and all that kind of stuff. Now, I was worried that would be quite preachy in like a Pixar film.
Yeah.
But actually they do it really, really well because we have Andrew Stanton who co-directed it and he's been with the franchise from the very beginning. So very much understands the whole tone of the Toy Story franchise where, you know, you want comedy, you want sentimentality, you also want it to appeal to adults and children. And it does it really, really well because you have then like when Jessie goes back to her original home in order to get back to Bonnie's house, she enlists the help of three older kind of operating service devices. One, Smarty Pants, who is an incredible new character voiced by Conan O'Brien, who is brilliant. So Smarty Pants' whole purpose is a toilet training like device. Then you have Atlas, who is like able to be like an early GPS, like navigational thing. And then Snappy, who can take pictures. So the three of them with Jessie are able to interact with other operational like devices. Now, I did wonder how like such old devices could interact with very new sophisticated ones, but that's where you just have to let
the suspension of disbelief. Yeah, exactly.
That was the one moment where I dropped that. But like the dynamic between them is really good. Like I was laughing quite a lot, which was just great as well, because like this franchise came out when I was 3 and I'm now 34 and I still love it. And like
we're
still as hyped for a Toy Story film as I was all those years ago. And it appeals, like the jokes are great. The animation is incredible in this one. And the animators were really adamant that they didn't want to use AI for it. So instead they brought in like new like animational like rendering techniques that they brought into Hoppers, which was hugely successful. But there's a horse, like a real horse in this called Daffodil, and they spent a year animating it just to get it like perfectly right. Pixar brought in an actual horse to the studio so they could do that. Even things like in the house, like they have a Monstera plant and all the leaves around the edges are brown. So again, as an adult, I appreciated the realness of that. It was a great time. Like very fun and like didn't disappoint.
The and some of the Toy Story films, I forget which number it was, but you know the one they're all just about to be incinerated.
Toy Story 3.
Trauma. I suppose that stands out because that's quite scary. Like, are there moments like that in this one?
No, it's more emotionally pulling. Like, it's more like the thing of Bonnie not having any friends.
Yeah.
And because she's so sweet.
How old is Bonnie now?
She's now 8.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
And like, but she still very has that like childlikeness to her because she's playing with her toys. Whereas a lot of the peers who are like on their devices have grown up much quicker. They're also able to message each other on the devices. And poor old Bonnie gets bullied because like they're all like, oh my God, you're such a baby. You still play with toys. And she has like milestones like going to her first sleepover and she's really buzzed. No pun intended. She's really excited about that.
Yeah.
But her friend sees she's brought Jessie and the horse
Bullseye.
And they slag her for it. They're like, oh my God, you brought your toys. And then she gets really self-conscious about it. So it's things like that where
girls
it's like
are bitches, aren't they?
Exactly.
Really?
But yeah, it's things like that where you're like, oh God, like everyone has experience of that, whether it's personal or seeing like a niece or nephew go through that. So it was more in that way. It wasn't so much scary. And then like just even like the cameos they bring in great levity. Like I was disappointed that Bad Bunny's Pizza with Sunglasses is only in it for a very short amount of time.
Okay.
Because he is very good in that.
Yeah.
We also get a new character of Jimmy Dean, which is a little like pick me pig. Excellent stuff.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, Conan O'Brien is having a really fantastic second act. Or is it his third act? I don't know. But as an actor, he's really...
Yeah, because we were only like talking about If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You recently.
Yeah.
Very different role, I would say, from this one.
Yeah.
But in each, like, he's so convincing. And like in this, he doesn't... it's not distracting that it's Conan O'Brien.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
his just natural comic flair and timing works so well, especially as well, like, because the toy looks like a toilet roll on a hanging thing. And like, of course, he makes a lot of like literal toilet humor. So perfect casting for it.
So if you were to rate 1 to 5
Oof.
In order of bestiness,
I would go...
Which is a real word, just in case anyone's wondering.
You just made it there.
Yeah.
I would go probably 3 as my number one.
Yeah.
Even though I can't return to it. 1, 2... No, sorry. 3, 1, 2, 5, and 4
Right. Okay. So 5 wouldn't be. Yeah. Okay. So 5 is the 4th best. Yeah.
Yeah. But like they're all like such masterpieces. Like they're really, like it is hard. Like you could interchange 5 and 2 because they're both very Jessie-centric.
Yeah.
And I think even just as an older person who's grown up with it, it works well as well within the whole story.
Mm.
But that's where I'm sitting at the moment. It could change.
That's okay. That's people are already texting in to say how wrong you are.
Okay.
And I'm sorry to have to...
About the order.
Is Buzz in it much?
He is in it a little bit. And like we were talking kind of there, like they've made him very dumb in this.
I hate it.
Yeah. Oh, so his whole thing is that he's just like frantically like following Jessie to try and like ask her something to progress their relationship. But aside from our original Buzz, we get an army of interactive Buzzes who just show up at the very beginning of the film, deserted on a like beach. And then their journey is kind of like a side plot where they're like trying to get to the mainland somehow. And you're wondering, how are these going to like relate? But they have a very crucial role within this.
Okay. Number one is the best, says somebody. Number three is scary and sad.
Yeah.
Number two is crap. And three
Wrong.
Is grand.
Sorry, that as someone who watched it really recently, two is very funny. Three is great, but like it is, you could argue that it is too sad. Two still got jokes.
Yeah.
Two has bars.
I think four is the least memorable.
But when I went back to it originally, because I was like, I couldn't remember a single thing that happened, I was still like very charmed by it because they have just animated Bonnie as like the saddest, most endearing child ever. I just look at her and I want to cry.
Yeah. Oh, well, good luck with five.
I'm not just ready. Shows it though, people, and be. People will vividly remember bits from each and they've done a fantastic job of making every film distinct from the other, even though it's the same set of characters.
Yeah.
It's a hell of a thing. Yeah. Right, so what is the show with Woody Harrelson and Matthew McConaughey?
We've talked about this on the show before. We talked about it ages ago because it was greenlit ages ago. I think it was 3 years ago that Woody Harrelson and Matthew McConaughey were working on this show with Apple TV, this comedy series called Brothers, in which they would play brothers based off of this real life theory that there was some revelation but from one of their family members that it turns out they might actually be related. They're not, but they were like, wouldn't that be gas to do as a TV show? And like, obviously people are obsessed with them since True Detective and they've stayed great friends and stuff. So yeah, this show is called Brothers. They're playing fictionalized versions of themselves. This is coming September 23rd on Apple TV. They're both executive producing as well. And basically it's Woody's daughter is getting married. This is the plot. Woody's daughter is getting married, heads to Austin to stay in Matthew's ranch for this wedding. But when they're on this kind of healing getaway, there's again a family revelation where it's like, oh, actually you could be related, and essentially hijinks ensues. So Woody's trying to turn the ranch upside down to find out the truth. And then also Matthew's having this identity crisis because he doesn't know who he is. Could he potentially be the governor of Texas? ? So they're both trying to figure that out.
Didn't you consider doing that?
This is the thing, it's a bit meta, like, which I kind of like.
Right.
But I've never kind of seen him. Well, I was about to say that he hasn't done comedy, which is actually fundamentally not true after I say it. He obviously had like the McConaissance where it was like, I'm not just a rom-com guy, I'm actually like a quote unquote real actor, with capital letters. But I think this could be interesting and potentially like very funny. I'm very intrigued. So one to watch out for, I would say.
And when is that?
This is September 23rd on Apple TV.
Okay, good stuff. Right, we'll take a break. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. There'll be more movies and booze, and of course we'll be giving away some money after this. Dean, tell us about the second IPA.
Okay, so we've got an Irish beer brewed by Nine White Deer down in the Gaeltacht in Ballyvourney, County Cork. It is Stag IPA and it is an American style IPA. So this is kind of more a classic craft IPA because the initial IPAs that were being brewed were West Coast IPAs. Now, there are a lot of different American hops, but there's kind of a big 5C hops. And as I go through this, I guarantee I'm going to miss one of them. Cascade, Centennial, Chinook, Columbus and Citra. So they initially brewed this beer to showcase all five of those hops.
Okay.
Now, one of the things with brewing beer, you're using natural ingredients and every year you've got a new harvest. And particularly quite a number of years ago, there was some challenges with hops where the hop harvests weren't good. And it was really hard to get some hops. But every year, the flavours that you're getting very slightly, not hugely, but very slightly with different hops. So what good brewers will do is they'll have a look at the blend of hops that they're using and they'll adapt it each year to try to achieve the flavours that they're trying to achieve.
Are they importing the hops from America or can these be grown in Ireland?
No. Well, there are some hops that have been grown in Ireland. There was Irish North Down that was being grown. There are some craft brewers that have tried to grow hops. It's quite hard to do. It takes a long time for the vines to establish. So they are hops that would be grown in America. Now, you can take cultivars of hops and grow them in different places. And sometimes when you get like some Czech Republic hops are found to be daughters of English hops where they've taken a cultivar, brought it over and it's kind of grown into a different hop because of the climate and the soil and so on that it has changed the hop slightly. But with this big 5Cs being used in it, but what they've done in recent years is they've adapted it. So they've taken out Citra because they weren't getting as good Citra as they wanted and brought brought in Willamette to do it. What you've got with it, kind of classic American West Coast IPA flavors, tropical fruit flavors, grapefruit. There's an amount of pine flavor in it, which is something that you get from Cascade and Centennial. That pine, again, it's a flavour that's coming from the hops, but it is a kind of a spice-like flavour. You know, it's a flavour that's reminiscent of spice. So that provides an amount of balance. The first of the beers was 6.7% ABV. So that's kind of, you know, pretty much in the mid-range for a classic IPA. 5.5 to 7.5 is the range for a classic IPA, but you can get session IPA IPAs below it and double IPAs above it. This one, 5% ABV, so a little step below.
Okay, all right.
But done a great job on it. Very, very well balanced. Good biscuity, caramelly malt flavours to the beer, and that provides good balance to the hop character and nice.
Is there an inexhaustible number of different varieties of hop?
They're producing them. I was at a really interesting conference and chatting to some guys on the west coast of the US a number of years ago that were working in universities where they literally just spent all of their time on hops. And they were looking at developing new hops, combining hops, like literally bringing two hop plants together and getting a new hop out of it. And also looking to develop hops that would develop specific essential oils so that they could get specific flavors in it. Also looking at some things, they were studying something which is kind of a funny thing that happens with beer. There's a flavour that comes through in beer called diacetyl. And depending on who you talk to, some people think it's nice, some people think it is, you know, it just shouldn't be there at all. The Germans absolutely hate diacetyl when you mention it. They kind of look at you as if you've said a dirty word. Yeah. But it's the butter flavour from, if you have butter on popcorn or butterscotch, that flavour. Now, what they found with hops is that diacetyl is developed during fermentation with certain beers, but then the yeast eats up the diacetyl and gets rid of it. So they had brewers that were brewing beer and finding that they had cleared out the diacetyl, and then 3 months later they'd find that there was diacetyl in the beer. And what it was that there were enzymes in the hops. When the hops were added in, the enzymes were running around and finding the bits of diacetyl that had been changed into not diacetyl and changing it back into diacetyl again.
Oh my God, right.
So they've got all this research going on just to try to work out where flavours are happening. And with beers, especially with beers with yeast in them, you've got live things going on. So it's evolving all the time. Flavours are completely...
Actually, a few questions about Toy Story. Somebody wants to know, do you need to see the fourth Toy Story out of the fifth?
No.
And it's not the and Toy Story 5, you reckon, isn't the final one?
I would be surprised if they stopped. Like, they have a great team. It's a great moneymaker for Pixar. People are always have an appetite for them.
Yeah.
Don't stop.
Highly unlikely. Yeah. Somebody says Woody Harrelson and Matthew McConaughey played brothers before in Ed TV years ago.
There you go.
There you go.
Before my time, I'd say.
No memory of that. Well done. Tell us about Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow.
Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow is the name of a book that is being adapted into a film, which I think I might have talked about previously. Daisy Edgar-Jones is starring in it, but we have a release date. So it's going to be out November 12th, 2027. And it's coming from the director of Coda, Cyan Heder. This is a book by Gabriel Zevin. It's like hugely popular book. Like, I think if people hear Tomorrow and Tomorrow, like, you'd probably be familiar with it from the book.
Okay.
And basically tells this story of two friends. They meet as children, reunite as adults, working on video games together, and it takes place across the 90s and the 2000s as the video game industry is kind of breaking out. I know some people are probably listening to that and like glazing over, but like, it's as much about them and the love story as it is about video games.
Yeah, sure.
So this is starring Daisy Edgar-Jones. As I said, book is hugely popular, 4 million copies. This is going to be a big movie, I would say. So that is out next year. We've a bit of a while to wait.
Because is Daisy Edgar, since Normal People, has Daisy Edgar-Jones' career blossomed as much as...
Where the
Not
Crawdads
really.
Is.
Some of her choices have been... She did the Where the Crawdads Fresh. Sing adaptation, which was by all accounts a flop. Yeah. She did Fresh, which I heard was good. That was her and Sebastian Stan, right? Yeah. I think that's on Disney Plus now, where they're cannibals. I don't think that's not a spoiler. I think that's the whole conceit of the film.
Yeah.
Kind of comedy horror kind of thing. Has she done anything else since?
Not I can't think.
Jumping off the dome.
Yeah.
Is she being more selective? But then is that also kind of, quote unquote, hindering her?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. Like, this has the potential to be, remember her? Like, isn't she great? You know what I mean? So, like, maybe this is what she's working on.
Yeah. Okay, maybe she is. Anyway, let's go to our second movie of the day. It's called A Private Life. It is a French language clip. Nonetheless, all of you will understand this.
J'ai pensé à quelque chose, Gavi, et je veux que tu le prennes au sérieux. Oui. Tenez, elle avait ça dans la main avant de mourir. C'est un message qu'elle m'a adressé.
Un message?
Vous pensez que je suis responsable de la mort de votre mère?
Mon père le pense.
Je suivais votre femme depuis 9 ans.
Je suis désolée.
Non, faut être
non, mais je suis désolée.
Faut être con!
The husband's reaction is unexpected. Redirected guilt towards a therapist and unprocessed emotion.
Oh my God, absolute filth. I apologize to any French speakers listening there. Right, so, but this is quite, it's quite a tense film.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit of a kind of Only Murders in the Building meets maybe Anatomy of a Fall.
Okay.
Yeah. So as you heard there in the clip, Jodie Foster is kind of talking about how a husband's anger is redirected at a psychiatrist. So basically what happens is Jodie Foster is playing an American psychiatrist living in Paris. And when we meet her, she is struggling to get in touch with one of her clients called Paula. But we find out that Paula has died. The news is that she died by suicide. But when Jodie Foster's character goes to the wake, the husband is very angry when he realizes she's there, kicks her out because he feels that she's responsible for the woman's death. And this ensues a detective kind of story where Jodie Foster is like, something seems off.
Yeah.
And I don't think that this was a suicide. I think perhaps this was a murder. And then the former patient's daughter visits her with, as we heard there in the clip, un message. And she believes that her mother has left her a message to kind of signify how and why she has died, which only sends Jodie Foster further down the rabbit hole. We also then have like side things of one of Jodie Foster's other patients is annoyed at her because for years...
She's not a very good therapist, is she?
Yeah, no. She also doesn't really listen to her patients, which is a plot point. And to solve that, she records all of the sessions on a mini disc player. Mm. So obviously, she's got tons of recordings of sessions.
Mm.
She leaves herself open to be robbed.
Yeah.
But another patient comes to her and is very annoyed because for years he's tried to stop smoking. He went to a hypnotist once and he's like quit the habit.
Yeah.
So she then has this thing where she can't stop crying. So she goes to see the hypnotist. Thus ensues her having these like past life regression, like experiences of like where, what she was doing in a former life. The now deceased former patient appears in them. Her son is in them. And this kind of unlocks all of this stuff of how Jodie Foster has to then kind of mend things with, you know, her strained relationship with her adult son, what actually happened with the patient. There is a lot going on.
Yeah.
Jodie Foster is really, really good in it, though, to like keep you invested because I love a murder mystery and I want to like figure out if I was right with thinking who did it.
Yeah.
The result I wasn't entirely satisfied with, but the journey along the way was really, really good. And like all the surrounding kind of acting is great. This is actually out next week. And I did see that the director, Rebecca Zlotowski, is going to be doing a Q&A in the IFI. So okay. That would be interesting to gain more kind of insight into the film because her career in itself is quite interesting where she's had kind of some hits and misses, has like worked with people like Natalie Portman, Lea Seydoux. In 2022, she had a film called Other People's Children, which kind of broke her through to more kind of mainstream, like international audiences. And as I said, like Jodie Foster was nominated for a César in this. When this premiered at Cannes, it got a 10-minute standing ovation.
Doesn't every film get a 10-minute standing ovation?
I know, but
the adverts get standing ovations in Cannes.
If it's less than 5 minutes, it doesn't count.
Exactly.
Are they playing this for laughs?
No.
Is it the same tonally as Only Murders in the Building?
At At times, sometimes, but no. Like, I say the only murders in a building thing because of the whole, you know, everywhere looks really nice. Her building, her apartment building is kind of important in it because that's where her office is. It has that same kind of breezy kind of feel to it. But the anatomy of a fall where it's like, think this is serious. That's kind of how the two of them kind of marry together. But it does have its funny moments in a weird way, especially in the like...
But just like a therapist who doesn't listen and just records things, that's inherently funny.
It is. And she's using mini discs. Yeah. Which she has to go over to her
son. Is it set in the modern era?
Yes.
It is. So she has to be going on eBay trying to find mini discs.
But she goes over to her son to do it.
Yeah.
Because she can't even do that herself.
Yeah, well, that's more like a comedy. But, you know, the French maybe aren't great at that.
Exactly.
Really. I don't stereotype the French. This is, I find this story about Ben Stiller deeply disturbing. Well, he's making this, fine, he's making this documentary about...
the New York Knicks,
Yeah, ball hopping. But does that mean, is that going to affect Severance?
I think, so
that's the disturbing part.
Yeah, that is the disturbing part, and I completely agree with you there. So I thought when the Knicks won, I said, brilliant, that man is going to go back to work with a spring in his step. No, actually not. He is going back to work, but not on the thing that I want him to be working on. He's working on a documentary with the New York Knicks. That's why he's been, well, he's courtside because he's obsessed with them, but he's been filming lots of stuff on his phone, and it's kind of a look at, you know, they've obviously won the first championship in 53 years, but it's looking at this era from the 90s up to now. He's working on with HBO and A24. But yeah, exactly as you said, no word on Severance. Like, where I'll be dead, I'd say. Yeah. And whenever I find out what the hell is going on in that building.
But presumably there are other people who would be working on Severance.
Well, like, everyone's been... I know Adam's... They're all kind of doing the rounds because I know the actor who plays Helly, whose name is escaping me now. Yes.
Britt Lauer.
Thank you. She is in a Harlan Coben thing on Netflix, I think.
Which is supposed to be the usual rubbish.
And she's, and she, I think she's been kind of asked about it, and they're all being very tight-lipped. So I'm kind of like, what does that mean? I don't know. But surely you would just say, do you know what I mean? Like, the Pitt's back in production. The Pitt's back in production, and they're going to be back in January 2027. That's a crew that is working on a schedule. Do you know what I mean? Like,
But probably, the Pitt is easier because it's just one set. And you know, back, it just, you think, they spend 6 weeks thinking up new injuries and then they chuck everybody back. I love the Pitt, but that's probably...
I know, but they're how was that easier when they're filming in a fake office for the for Severance? Do you know what I mean? That's one set, generally speaking.
That's true. Well, they have to go outside and drive around the place. And,
I suppose, sometimes, yeah.
Look crazy.
Look, anyway, we're no closer to it. There's no word. There was lots of initial rumours that they were filming this summer and then it would be next year, but like, there's been nothing confirmed. So I, like, if we get it next year, great, but I'm kind of thinking 2028 at this stage.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
I don't feel good.
Don't feel good.
I really don't feel good.
I wish the Knicks had never won now, is my feeling. That's our lot for today. Thanks to Dean, Zara and Fionnuala.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
The martini, shaken not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.